What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the 25 High Podcast. We're not 100% sure what we're going to talk about. We got ideas. Mostly, we're just going to talk.
Let it flow.
Pretty much. And before we get into it, I'd like to thank Native Sense and Threads Bowstrings, the two companies that help us out a lot, and we support them because they support us pretty much.
Yep, great products, and even better people operating them.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd also like to plug our hats that we have right now. We are planning on eventually growing the apparel line, but that is almost impossible to do right now because you can't buy apparel to get done.
Yeah. Well, Richardson 112, Bottomland, and even the Realtree Original, they're back ordered till like September.
Every hat's order is pretty much back ordered, but we do have some available on our website, which should be linked down below, especially if you're on YouTube podcast wise. The safe bet is to go to our YouTube channel and look in the description, but we should be able to link it down below.
By the way, on
Instagram as well.
Yeah. By the way, if you're listening and you're not familiar with us for whatever reason, we have a YouTube channel. If you're watching on YouTube, you already know that, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you're listening and this is your first time listening, go check us out on YouTube. It's just 25 High. You type in 25 High and it'll come up. Hopefully I can figure out how to link that in the podcast thing too.
And we typically post twice a week on YouTube, but that has been really hard to do here lately because it rains every single day. It's raining every single day, and it's just really hard to create content in the rain,
especially in the summer. Because like, I'll sit in a shooting house if I have to, you know. In the rain in the wintertime, if it's not bad, like some days it's just been kind of misty, I'll sit in a saddle or in a ladder or something. But yeah, it's been raining. All the river closest to us is about. Is normally this time of year it's supposed to be around 5-6 feet at the wherever the measuring thing, and it's like 12 or 14 right now, and it's just muddy and current. I mean, I am planning on going catfishing soon, at least running lines. I don't know how to catch catfish on rod and reel hardly, but
don't you just put a circle hook on a rig and put like something weighted down and then just throw out like chicken livers?
I know how to do it.
Just sit there and wait.
I know how to do it. I'm not that good.
Yeah.
Like, I can go out, I can catch a bass in a mud puddle if I need to, but I might not catch a lot, but I can catch a bass anywhere. But I don't know. I'm just not good with catfishing. But my uncle texted me and said that we got Catawba worms. Catawba, whatever you want to say. I don't know the
Catawba worms.
Catawba worms. We got some of them.
Those green and black ones.
Yes, and that I was telling one of my buddies the other day that we used to go down to like boat launches and just random spots on the river and try to catfish with cut bait or chicken livers or stink bait, whatever we could find. And normally we wouldn't catch anything. Every now and then we catch one or two. One night, we went out there with Catawba worms, and we caught like 10 eater catfish that night from a boat launch. So, it's magical bait. I need to go pick some, and I need to go run lines with them, or put them fishing something.
Catawba worm season's about over.
Yeah, my uncle said they're just about too big to, or just about big enough to go back in the ground or whatever they do. Disappear. Yeah. So
starting off, we're just going to give you a quick update, you know, what's been going on, what we've been doing, and then we're going to roll into a hunting topic. But I haven't been doing too much, really, because of rain and work and stuff like that. So I haven't been able to really get out. Now, I do have in the works a video that I'll probably go up, so let's see if this bears next week. It'll probably go up around the 20th that week. And it is a test on different attractants that you could deer attractants that you can put out, what attracts or what does deer like better from Tractor Supply. I got three different deer attractants, then I also have a control substance of just regular whole feed corn, so that'd be interesting. Like I said, I put it out this past weekend, and I got three different trail cameras on it, so hopefully we're able to get some good information coming back from that.
And you've heard us mention it before, like this time of year, there's a train going by, I apologize, but this time of year, our deer, they have like 6-8 inches of antler right now in velvet, so it's hard to tell what's going to be what, but, you know, we can still go ahead and get them trained on that feed.
Yeah, like I checked a camera that I had out last weekend when I did that, when I set that test up, and I got one picture of a buck that only had about, you know, 4 inches coming off of each side. So we won't be able to tell what we have for another month, really. But other than that, it's good to get out there and see what deer like. Enjoy that.
So I went scouting the other day. And I mentioned, I don't remember if it was the last podcast we did or the first one, this, whatever it was, one of the last couple podcasts, we talked about scouting, and I mentioned that on public land, it's very difficult to, like, find deer in the summertime, especially around here, and I think I may have mentioned that it was kind of pointless to go out there and look, but the thing is, I think what I was trying to get at is it's more pointless to actually look for a specific buck and really try to dial it in this time of year. And yeah, that's basically what I was saying. But it's still a good idea if you get some free time to go out and look around and see, just if nothing else, get the lay of the land, try to find the thickets, try to find what deer have been using in the past based off like old rut sign and stuff. So I went down to this chunk of public, never been to this specific spot, and I walked down, and basically it was kind of like what you were talking about. It was where a creek bottom makes a V, or two creek bottoms come together, basically. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even fully realize that's what I was doing until I got down there, but I basically walked the whole edge of that creek bottom, and it's pretty interesting because it's like a... It's like 100, or I'm trying to think. It's like 600 yards long on the edge of this creek bottom is like a 60 yard wide oak flat. And I mean, it looks beautiful down there. It's right next to that creek bottom where I know deer bed. There's a couple thickets around there. It sets up pretty great. However, being that long of a stretch of good looking stuff, it's hard to narrow that stuff down. So that's kind of what I was doing, is trying to narrow down what might be the best place to go back and look where they're at, you know, September, October, maybe hang some cameras in there later in the summer. But I get down there, and just like you were saying with the Y's in the creek, as soon as I got to that corner, right next to that corner, I didn't even fully realize it, but right pretty much where those two creek bottoms come together is a property line, and there's a really thick chunk of private there on the other side of the creek bottom. So I lost my train of thought. So I get down there, I get to that Y, I see all that stuff, and then I think I was mentioning, like, one of my favorite things to look for is like a discrepancy in those creek bottoms or in a thicket, like a little bit of thick something coming out. And when I get down there, I'm walking, the oak flat kind of dead ends into the other creek Y thing, and right at the edge of the oak flat is a section of thick stuff that's like, it's hard to describe, because it's like you got your pine thickets that are like yaupons and mess, and then like when it's thick under oaks, it's usually a different understory down there. So it was some of that, and there's, like I mentioned, there's like three or four edges coming together, solid trail coming right out of that creek bottom. So I'm pretty excited about that spot.
That's one thing good about getting down there and just walking down the edges of creek bottoms is when you find a trail, they're very noticeable. It's going to be beat down. There's not going to be much vegetation coming out of that trail. It's going to be like just a little mud hole or whatever. And it's just a lot easier to identify deer sign through coming out of those creek bottoms. So if you have some creek bottoms that you're trying to hunt near, just put in the man time, hours, the miles, and just walk all the way down it as close as you can to that waterway, and you will be able to see noticeable sign coming out of it.
And just to kind of explain how our creek bottoms are, like, if you're not in our area, you probably, like, I know a lot of guys talk about the big hardwood bottoms up in, like, hill country, up in, you know, North Alabama or North Mississippi or wherever it may be. And up there in that hill, more hilly stuff, foothills of the Appalachians, it's like you go down into a creek bottom and it opens up and it's just these big, wide, open ground, and it's covered in oaks, but you're never going to see, you're rarely on public land are you going to see deer down there, except maybe the rut, or if you get lucky, you got to look for the thick stuff there. But down here, our creek bottoms are the opposite. It's like everything outside of the creek bottom, especially on public land and like your lease, it's all like, it's pretty open when you're outside of the creek bottoms. Like, there's thickets, there might be clear cuts or something that creates a thicket. But once you get down to those creek bottoms, most of the time around here, you can't walk through them.
Yeah.
Like, you're crawling through them.
Yeah, like, I've been through a couple years ago when I was hunting Dirty Elvis. I tried to hunt in a new area that I knew he was working around. I didn't know if he was in that specific area. But I had to go through a creek bottom to reach a section of land that was a part of our lease that hadn't been hunted at all since we've been in that lease since I was a little kid. I know for a fact that it hadn't been touched. And I can tell you, it was so thick trying to make it through that creek bottom. You would have to guarantee me a shot at a 150 before I walk through that bottom again.
That's probably where one lives, though.
Yeah. It's so thick when you're carrying in your gear and your bow or whatever you're hunting with in. It's just such a big pain. Yeah, that it's not even worth it.
You got a big old summit, and that thing's going to grab everything when you're walking through. Now, you know what's nice, though? You know what's nice? So a summit, a lat tree stand, any type of climber, they stick off most climbers, except for, I think, lone wolves, they kind of collapse a little bit. But they're still sticking out outside of your shoulders about 4 feet.
No, they're
and
not.
And then they're sticking out the back about 3. Like a summit, you can't fold it down. It's solid, which they're super strong, super comfortable, all that stuff. But they stick way out the back, and there's all that stuff and all those vines.
Maybe when you're, maybe when you're, 5'8", 5'10", 5'9", and a 150. But when you're a big guy, they don't stick out wider than you.
they stick out a lot wider than me, and they grab onto everything in them bottoms, so. All I'm saying, I'm just trying to give you guys an idea of like what.
Just to hit on a personal thread real quick, climbers are better than saddles. Just
whatever. I love my saddle, and now one thing, I am considering getting something like a Lone Wolf, like hand climber or something, because they're super lightweight, they're super collapsible and all. But I noticed, like, The only reason I would want to use a climber is because in January and the first few days of February, our deer are rutting. There's a lot of times where you need to get up like super high, which I could like one stick with my saddle stuff, but I really don't want to do that. I could carry in 15 sticks or something stupid, but like for me, the saddle is perfect for bow hunting because you're focused on one small area. But when it's the rut, you got to look at a whole bunch of areas. And the only downside of a saddle that I've found so far is it's very tough to get a solid rest to shoot over like 150 yards or so with a rifle. And bow hunting, like I say, I love it. It's perfect for me. Super lightweight and all, but I really want to get something where I can climb higher, easier. Plus, if I did that, I could probably use the top of it as my platform for bow hunting.
The top of it as your platform for bow hunting?
Like with the saddle.
Oh.
Climb with the seat, basically. I don't know. It's just an idea. I am considering getting a climber just for the rut, basically. But otherwise, especially if I'm bow hunting, I don't see myself going back. But anyway, so one last thing about the scouting trip or whatever. I walked down. Gosh, I lost my train of thought again. I'm just not.
You walked down what?
I walked down the creek bottom, and when I found that, like I was mentioning, the discrepancy. Oh, I was gonna say, like, being that wide open, and having that big like expanse of the same looking stuff. Like, there's a really nice hard edge, which is something you look for between the creek bottom and the oak flat. And then there's another pretty good edge between the oak flat and the pines. But it's just so long and there's nothing that like breaks it up. So it's really tough to like go down there and see what looks good for the deer to cross there, you know? So I'm glad I found something, because when I get, like I say, I get down there in the oak flat, everything ends on the other creek bottom. And it's like creates a perfect, like, four different edges coming together. There's a trail coming out of the private and a trail coming out of that thicker stuff that was right on the edge of the pines. And it sets up really great. It's a matter of, you know, whether other people know about it pretty much, which I'm sure they do. But if it's as hard to get in there as it was for me, and I just didn't. I was thinking about it. There may be a road or something that leads right to it that I just missed, like an old road, but it was tough to get in there for me. So,
the tougher it is to get into it, the less likely you are to run into other people trying to hunt it.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, is because there's so many places out here, especially out on public, and like you can just walk anywhere, most of it, because it's wide open, and that also makes it very tough to hunt because it's so wide open most of the time.
And in most Alabama public land, especially southern Alabama public land, there's so many roadways and stuff. I don't know of anywhere that I've been on it that you can walk, you know, 1,400 yards without hitting another road. It's mostly blocked off and surrounded by roads to where you don't have to actually walk that far to get to areas.
Most of it, you're not going to be more than 300 yards from a road.
Yeah.
I found one spot where you can walk. I mean, there is a road that goes back there, but you can't drive down the road. And I found one spot there that you can walk, I think it's over a mile deep, without any cars going back there. But then I find out, because my neighbor's lease touches it, that there's a whole bunch of people that hunt that backside from the private. So it's basically like, that basically just cuts it in half, you know. So.
For sure. So what else have you been doing other than scouting here recently?
I did go fishing on a pier, and like an idiot, we're not going to catch anything. I'll just leave my GoPro in the truck. We get out there. Good buddy Lovett. I drop down a sabiki rig down the pier and pull up some bait, like, immediately. We were using, like, 10-inch LYs. And we put that thing on a hook, drop it down, and it wasn't 5 minutes, and Lovett's got one screaming drag. And he grabs that rod, you know, and he's fighting this fish, and it's wrapped up on every pile in it under that pier. And he pulls it up. Darn if it wasn't a 40-inch red. Biggest redfish I've ever seen in my life. And that was only his third redfish ever.
Maybe you can pop it up.
Yeah, I'll put up a little picture or something. But we ended up, like, I've mentioned this to my buddies, but like, I have been to piers, docks, beaches, all sorts of stuff everywhere in saltwater, and I'll catch bait on a sabiki rig, and I'm not offshore. I'm talking about like shore-based stuff, you know. You catch bait. It's just the way it works is you catch bait, you put a hook through it, and you cast it out there. And I don't know how people are good at it, because every time I've ever been to a pier, every time I've done it, I sit there and all I'm doing is catching bait, because that's the only thing that's biting, and I never catch anything big. But that day, I think we broke off on 8 redfish and landed 2 giants. And if we would have had better gear, you know, we probably would have landed more. And then we watched a guy land a freaking tarpon. I didn't even know. Well, I knew they existed around here, but I didn't know they were that thick around here. Because we had a school of them circling the pier all day long, about 20 of them. The whole time we were there, they were swimming right under us.
How big was it?
The one that I saw landed was, he had to have been 6 foot long. It was like a 150-pound fish, and this dude had one of them Van Stahls and a big old rod. And that thing, most of the fight, he was just sitting there holding it and letting the thing run. It was wild.
Yeah. But every time I go to the pier and fish or something like that, I can't get it in before it gets ate by dolphins. I can't tell you how many heads I've reeled in.
Yep. And we saw a manta ray. I didn't know manta rays lived this far north in the Gulf, but there we saw a legit manta ray that was like probably like 6-7 foot long, wide on it, like wingspan or whatever. Had to have been like 6 or 7 foot or more, just huge. And we saw like a 8 foot bull shark. We sat in the rain in a legit thunderstorm for like an hour and a half because the fish were still biting.
That's like, so I think about all these people that go to the beach and go swimming in the beach, and some of you might, but obviously have not been on those piers fishing. I can tell you, I'm not scared of most things, but I don't know if you could convince me to get into the water again in the Gulf.
I mean, I'll get.
Knee deep, but I'm talking about like some people get like 150, 200 feet out in that water.
There was a dude that swam out almost to where we were, and literally right before he swam out is when we saw that 8 foot bull shark.
Yeah.
And I went. There was one day I went to a pier, and now granted these aren't probably going to hurt you that much, but there was like 3 and 4 foot black tips swimming between people. I was watching them swim literally like weaving in and out of people in like waist deep water, dude.
What made me decide not to ever do it again is, okay, so we were out fishing. I was probably 16 or so, and we've been fishing on that pier all morning, and we were walking back to, we weren't done, but we were walking to go get lunch and then come back out and fish some more. And when we were walking back, we looked over the pier. And now, I know it wasn't one that actually hurt you, but I watched, it was anywhere from 12 to 15 foot hammered head shark. Now, I know they aren't supposed to bite people. I don't know if they physically can. I don't know how.
But not near as often like a bull shark.
But substitute that with any other bull shark or, you know, anything that any type of other shark really. And that big shark, there was a woman sitting on a tube about 10, 15 feet off the shoreline. And that shark swam right up underneath her. Mm-mm. And was sitting there circling that woman. Mm-mm. And that woman had no idea we were there. And we were having a conversation. Should we yell down there and tell her there's a shark, and some guy walked up and saw it and ended up yelling at her.
I mean,
but at that situation, the only thing she's gonna do is freak out, make a bunch of splash, and that might what would be to entice the shark to actually do something. But she had not a clue in the world that death was right up underneath her, just waiting. Like, I know it was a hammerhead shark, but if that was a bull shark, she could have been dead like that.
The thing is, if there's a hammerhead that close, which I don't know anything about sharks. I do watch Shark Week every year.
That's about my limited knowledge is Shark Week.
Yeah, I watch Shark Week religiously. It's coming up, like, it should be posted, like, whenever this, or this podcast should go up, like, during Shark
Week. We need to go shark fishing.
We do. I really want to one day. And I've seen where some guys do it with, like, just surf rods.
I
want
to catch one with one of those, you know, those circle hooks. We got, like, that's, like, you hold it up, just the hook's about like that.
Yeah. It's like one pound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. But the thing is, like, hammerheads, I know they eat stingrays, so that may be why he was closer, but if, like, a 12-foot hammerhead is going to be 10 feet off the shore.
What else?
Every other shark is going to be there, too.
No, thank you. Everything out there in the Gulf has teeth and it eats meat except for jellyfish, and they hurt like crap.
That one dude that swam out like all the way, he swam out probably at least 100 yards, and you know what the stupidest part was? It was cloudy and it was right before dark. That was the dumbest part. Like, if you can do that midday when it's sunny, that's the least likelihood that a shark's going to attack you. But if you're splashing around on the surface at dusk when it's cloudy and the water's murky because it's just been rained on for, you know, an hour and a half, man.
We saw two people swim snorkeling, but they were on the surface all the way around the pier while there was at least 100 people fishing off of it casting toward them. Just some people don't think. It might be safe to get out that far if you're a good swimmer on the beach, everywhere on the beach, but don't do it next to a pier where people are literally like chumming the water.
Yeah. And that's like, piers are pretty much like, I think what you're supposed to fish on when you're surf fishing is like rip current looking stuff. And that's like the only structure. But when you put like a whole bunch of pilings and a big thing of shade out into the ocean,
fish are going to hang out up underneath it.
It's the only structure they have along the shoreline.
And where there's fish, there's things that eat fish.
Yes.
And that's where you get dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But that was some pretty impressive reds that Lovett and Nolan caught.
And there's no telling how big the ones we hooked up on was. And the craziest part was, like, I wasn't paying too much attention to anybody else, but I helped another guy land a red, and he broke off on another red. And apparently, Lovett said a couple people hooked up, but, like, from what I saw, the only people who caught, like, big fish was, like, two guys that hooked up on tarpon. And one guy lost one, like, immediately, and the other dude landed it, and us.
I looked at that picture of Lovett holding his fish, and everybody in that background's like, I can't believe he caught that. Oh, yeah. It's hilarious looking at those people's facial expressions in the back of that picture.
It's funny, but it's also kind of annoying, because when you're on a pier, especially the people that are walking that don't really know much
about
fishing,
they're just looking, yeah.
Oh, they hear drag scream, and not just a crowd. Just goes towards that drag. The dude was hooked up on the tarpon, and I'll admit, I've never, like, seen a tarpon that close, so I was one of them during that. But half the people on the pier were around him the whole time he was hooked up. Oh, the craziest part, when that tarpon first started running, it ran straight towards the beach. And it went to the beach, and I think it was literally trying to, like, get the line wrapped up on a person, dude. Because he was swimming super close to the beach, and then he just ran straight out, And that dude was just sitting there, just and then it went straight back to the deep, and he ended up walking. I don't know where he hooked up on it, but it went to the beach, and he followed it down there, and then when it started going out, he ended up landing it on the very end of the pier. It was like a 45-minute fight, dude. It was awesome.
That's cool. I watched it. So, dude, we were fishing down there one time, and the Spanish were running, and this dude hooked up to a good one, and he was fighting it and kind of letting it run. And then suddenly all we saw was dolphins or bottlenose porpoises, whatever, and they were chasing after that fish. And so he stopped letting it sit there, and he was trying to get it in, just trying to get it in. Anyway, right when he gets it like 20 feet from the pier, that porpoise just munches him now. And he grabs that porpoise, gets the hook and all.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs with it, and I've never heard drag being ripped out of a line so fast in my life. And he sat there, and he was trying to get it to come off, I guess. I don't know, or break it off or whatever. And he sat there, and he was pulling on it, trying to get it, and that thing was just sadly screaming. And I was like, I was younger, and That guy's like, anybody got a knife? And I was like, I got one. I pulled a knife. He says, cut that line, because he was getting tired of it and he wanted to get back to fishing. So I said, okay. And I reached my pocket knife out there, and it had so much tension, I just had to touch that line, and I barely laid that knife onto that line, and it just snapped it.
I mean, they're not fish, but they're huge.
Yeah,
and they swim.
Yeah, they're awesome. I mean, I don't know what the legalities are. I don't know if they're legal to fish. I don't know.
All I know is you can't.
I don't have any use to catch one, so I just let
them. I've heard they taste like chicken.
They probably do.
So
they are a mammal, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're basically a chicken.
Speaking of that, so you know how there's a slot for reds? If you pull up like a 40-inch red that's like cut in half by a dolphin, can you just keep it? Because it falls within the slot then, and it's already dead.
I would think if a game warden or anybody tried to write you a ticket for that, they would be a complete imbecile.
Yeah, because, I mean, if
it was dead, what's the point of throwing it back?
It's dead and the dolphin had half of it.
The whole tail end of him gone. Why not just throw it in the cooler?
I don't know. Like, I've never – I know. I remember I went deep sea fishing one time, and we hooked in – my dad hooked into, like, a big grouper. Like, not like a Goliath. Like, I'm talking like probably a 30-pound, 40-pound, I don't know what type, but big grouper.
Standard grouper.
Yeah. He pulls it up there, and we didn't know what it was. And when he gets it up to the surface, it was like this freaking 6-foot-long-looking thing. And nobody – I was too young to really know what was going on. I was just like, that fish looks weird. And then 5.5 feet of that fish swims off. Biggest barracuda I've ever seen. And we got the head and about 2 inches of the start of the fillet, and we kept it.
Going offshore fishing's fun. Like, I've been blessed. I haven't went on a lot, but I've been blessed. The ones that I've been on are really good. Like, I mean, just about every time you drop a line down, you catch them. Like red snapper, time you drop it down, it's fun. But like, I get kind of like, you go out there and you drive 30 or 50 miles out and you just sit there and wear them out for like 20 minutes, and I get bored because that's all you do is drop it down. It's not like red fishing or even pier fishing, really, because if you're with a good captain, which I highly recommend going, it is fun. But
especially if you've never been.
It's, yeah, but all you do is sit there and drop down a line and reel it up and have a fish on there. Drop down a line, reel it up, have a fish on there. Only reason I care to go offshore fishing again is if food. I'm going out. Huh?
The food. The fillets.
The food purposes. And also, I'm talking about for excitement-wise, is if I was going, you know, swordfish or marlin and that type. That's
rich man sport.
Yeah, but I really want to do it. I really want to catch like a 1,200-pound swordfish or
that'd be awesome.
Whatever.
The thing for me is...
But that takes like $8,000.
Yeah. For me is I like hearing drag scream.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's a good-sized bass on a finesse rod. I don't care if it's a alligator gar, long nose gar. I don't care what it is. If it's a fish, it'll pull a drag. I want
to
catch it.
Sometimes when you go brim fishing, you just set that thing to where you got to be pulling on. You got to be reeling for it not to be dragging. Even when you're reeling, it's dragging.
Yeah.
Just for a bluegill, just so you can hear that thing whine.
Yeah. Back, I used to be a big time crappie fisherman.
Big time.
He caught
three a trip. Big time.
No, we used to, me and old Nolan, we used to wear them out, man. And I got to where I would use 2-pound tests just to make it more fun. 2-pound tests on a little ultralight spinning rod. That was fun now. When we had a little honey hole, and every trip we'd catch a couple over like 14 inches. I think the biggest one we ever pulled out was like 16.
I don't know. I wonder what the state record for that is.
Oh, dude, it's probably like 3 pounds or something.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty big. I've seen some that are, you know, 2 pounds. So.
Yeah.
I ain't never caught one that big, though.
No, I've never put one on a scale, really. But I think my biggest is like 15 or 16 inches.
So, real quick, what's harder to catch? Shellcracker or perch, crappie, white crappie, whatever you want to call it, white perch? That's very hard to distinguish the for.
Well, it depends because, like, if white, we call them white perch in the South, but they're
a crappie.
They're crappie
perch.
So a white perch, if it's like spring, like my favorite time to go is between deer season and turkey season, because if turkey season, it ain't worth it to go chase a.
The best time to fish the best time to fish is when we're worried about turkey hunting. Period.
Yes, that's the best bass fishing, best everything. But I'm too busy turkey hunting. So my favorite time to perch fish is February 11th to, well, it used to be March 14th, but now they've changed it all up. But that when the water's still cold, you drop down a minnow on a tree and you're catching a white perch. But, like, shellcracker... I don't know. Y'all always catch them, but it's like one thing though. They
if
have
you're
the
specifically
bite.
Targeting shellcracker, they're very hard fish to catch. You can accidentally catch them while perch or as regular brown fishing, bluegill fishing, but it
just depends because I don't know. One thing whenever you are brim fishing, you can tell what it is because a bluegill is gonna hit it and run with it. And that shellcracker is kind of like a sheep's head. They sit there and munch on it. They sit there and your cork will just barely move, and you're like, oh, this is either really small or it's a shellcracker.
Yeah, I really like bluegill fishing because them little jokers can fight.
Mm-hmm. They turn, especially you hook up to a big one, they turn sideways.
Yeah.
Especially if there's current. They like
It's like trying to fight a plate in.
Yeah.
But, so get back to hunting, mainly kind of what I wanted to ask you and let's talk about for a second. Deer hunting. What's your favorite time of the year to hunt and why?
Well, it's kind of a loaded question because I love early season hunting and I've had a lot of success hunting early season, mostly over bait, but... Like bow season, it's typically a lot easier to get a solid pattern. You know, you've been working all summer long or half the summer to trying to pattern out these deer, and you get in there, and that first week or two is your best opportunity. I mean, it doesn't always work that way. Most of the time, it doesn't work that way. But, you know, early season is usually your best opportunity to get on a good buck that's not as wary as he's going to be later in the season. And then December is probably the absolute worst time to hunt in Alabama, in our neck of the woods. Like, some places in Alabama, that's their rut. And then January would probably be bad for them. But I think my favorite time is, like, October and the first part of November. But then also, like, the couple of days before the rut starts. Or about a week or two before the rut starts. Cause I love rut hunting, you know, it's magical, and last year I should have tagged out during the rut, but also I'm like the most unlucky rut hunter, cause up until last year, I don't think I'd ever killed but like one or two bucks during the rut.
I'd usually kill a buck a year during the rut. That is, in my opinion, the rut is the funnest time to hunt.
Yeah.
Because literally anything can happen. You could be been watching deer for the past, you know, 8 months, and that lived solely in that area, and he may be gone, you know, miles away from you at that time,
and then random bucks but, that you never knew existed show up.
It's pretty amazing having those new bucks come in. Now, I'd say the vast majority of deer probably stick within rut within their core area to begin with. There is that chance that one big buck chases that, or stays with that one doe forever, that travels a long way and comes in. Like, for example, two examples going both ways is my dad killed Dirty Elvis in his core area at the very end of January. And that buck, he stayed in his core area predominantly, but he was ran down. We got pictures that he lost probably lost 50 pounds from the beginning of the rut to the end of the rut when we shot him. And then otherwise is a buck that the biggest buck killed off of our lease that we've been out there was about an inch and a half bigger than Dirty Elvis, was killed on a food plot that was when we had no earthly idea that buck was there. He came off from rut. He was chasing. Like, he was, that buck was not located in our club before the rut. Yeah. He came in chasing, and so there's, you kind of get the best of both worlds in that.
It's pretty interesting how, like, our deer, like you're saying, a lot of them do kind of stick to their main area. I mean, they're certainly going to open up.
When I say main area, that can be 300-400 acres though.
Yeah,
that, I mean,
or more. Like, but our deer don't really have to move. If they don't want to, they could sit in one spot and breed 20 does. They could stay in one area. They could stay within a couple hundred yard radius and breed at 10 does in a year if they wanted to. So our deer don't have to move, but it's so interesting. They got that instinct even when they don't have to go anywhere to find a doe, to find a mate. They still, some of them will still just run, which I have that wide 6-7, whatever he's going to be this year, that buck, he stays in one area, but it's like, I feel like he's got a bunch of different, like, beds, like, more than most deer, because he bounces around this one clear-cut thing, and he goes all the way around it, and he also shows up, like, a good ways from it.
Well, I think we talked about this not on the podcast, but, like, a lot of mature bucks will have two or three beds that they use a lot, but they may have 15 or 20 beds that they use
every now and
then. So, it's, just kind of luck being in that same spot when they come through. But yep.
My theory on it, which I have no true evidence because I don't focus on like actual specific, I don't focus on specific deer as much, and I don't focus on, which I want to, and I don't focus on specific like bedding areas. I focus on like general stuff mainly. But my theory on it is our deer don't bed like they do in other places.
And it's like, I don't pay much attention to bedding areas. I may contemplate areas that this buck may bed.
Exactly.
But it's all in trying to find his travel routes going to and from food sources or to and from different beds. So I look at potential bedding areas, but I don't try to hunt the bedding areas. I try to hunt the travel routes going to them.
That's kind of what I'm saying. Like for, like I feel like it's not as, I feel like around here, around us, it's not going to be as beneficial to try to track a deer back to his bed because he might not have his bed. He's got all these areas that he knows are safe. And depending on what the wind's doing or what he was doing or if he got spooked or whatever the case may be, I feel like every deer is different too. Because there might be some of our bucks that have like one specific bed that they go to almost every night, and they're still going to travel and they're still going to bounce around a little bit. But I feel like in general, our deer just don't stick to one bed like they do. Because the other thing about it is around here, they can lay down just about anywhere.
They can.
Like, on your lease, if it's not like just after a burn, if it's like 2 years, you know, that stuff's waist-high yopons everywhere. And it doesn't seem like much when you're walking through it or looking at it. But if there's a good buck laying down in that, especially like, say, like a tree fell over in it, and there's a big old treetop, and he's bedded down on one side of that treetop, and there's yopons literally all around him, you're never going to see him.
That's like last year, me and a guy in our club, we were walking down a bush hog trail in those yopons, and I stopped and was looking at something, and he kept walking down the trail, and he stopped, and he was turning back around. We kind of made it toward the end of the bush hog trail, and he stopped, and he turned around. He was walking back. Whenever he turned around walking back, a doe jumped out of those yopons and almost hit him. That doe just watched him walk by and watched him turn around. I guess when he turned around, started walking back, he was like, "Oh, he saw me," or something like that. And she jumps out, and we had no idea that deer was there. So they can literally, in that type of stuff, they can literally lay down anywhere and not be seen. And he almost got hit by her.
Yeah. And I say yopons, it depends on where you're at. It's usually yopons and gallberries around here.
They're aggravating. I hate them. I don't know what they're yopon. I've heard them called yopon, gallberry.
Yopon and gallberry are different things.
Yeah, but I mean,
underbrush.
Really thick underbrush. It's that type of stuff that you can't, you know, most limbs you can sit there and bend and break. It's that type of limb you got to go like this 100 times, pull, and then cut it. And I hate it. It sucks.
It's native, though.
It's hunting in the South.
Yep.
If I had my way, we'd burn about once every 3 months.
I don't know if you'd have any deer then or any turkeys or anything.
Oh, yeah. The turkeys would love it.
They wouldn't live there, but they...
No, they come have, every... They come every day, though.
They wouldn't bed in it.
No.
And turkeys wouldn't.
And turkeys wouldn't bed in it?
Nope.
That's right.
So, I don't really know what else to talk about.
My favorite time of the year to hunt is early season.
Yeah.
That's my favorite time of the year to hunt. I have the most fun hunting the rut, but my favorite time, I know that sounds weird, but
I totally understand what you're saying.
It's more fun to hunt the rut because it's easier in a sense. You get to go out there and you enjoy it. You got deer running everywhere typically, but my favorite time of year to hunt is typically early season, October the 15th, all the way till rifle season comes in, whatever date that ends up falling on. But, and that, the reason being that is because I predominantly get to hunt by myself a lot out there.
There's
and,
a lot less people that bow hunt, even on the public and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot, less people, and you have that 2 or 3 week opportunity to kill bucks that are still on their summer pattern. That first time that they may change beforehand, but if they don't change beforehand, the first time a rifle cracks off in that lease or the bordering leases, they are changing their pattern right then.
And it's kind of like, in my mind, it's kind of like the degrees of fun, because it's like bow hunting. On one hand, it is super stressful, especially targeting a specific buck. And, or not necessarily one specific buck, but like, you know, if you're targeting big bucks during bow season and you've got them on camera, you're basing off of like trail camera data and scouting and all that stuff, it can be super stressful if you let it be.
It's like a really extravagant game of chess.
Yes. And it's like, a lot of times it's not fun while you're doing it. Especially when you're not seeing anything.
It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, and
very, very rewarding.
Oh yeah, that's successful. Yeah, it's like when you look back on it, you're like, man, that was fun. But in the middle of it, you're like, what the hell am I doing?
like Mohican, as much work as I put in it, I don't care if that buck is 118 inches or 180 inches. He still feels the same.
Yeah.
It's that much reward that came in, that satisfaction of being able to pull that off was unbelievable. So that's the reason I like early seasons. You have like right now, cameras are out, even though I'm not really running them. I just, you know, doing tests, and I just set a couple up in a few locations. But it's that all that work from mid that August the 1st till that to that October the 15th, going out there three or four times a week, checking cameras, moving cameras, putting out feed and stuff like that, scouting, putting in the work, and then it compiling into the potential of you actually coming face to face with that animal to be able to try to successfully harvest it. That's what makes it the best time of the year for me to hunt. The rut is definitely funner, but early season has the higher chance of a personal reward. Now, if you kill 130 that without trying early season, and if you kill 130 chasing in the rut, they'll probably feel about the same.
Oh yeah, I'm very interested to see, because I hunted this one chunk of public. It's kind of hill country. It's a little bit of a drive for me at school, but I'm very interested to see what early season's like out there, because I was hunting some swampy stuff that I can't get the hang of it. I on one hand, I kind of enjoy it just because it's different and it's unique and all, but I just can't get the hang of that stuff. And so I'm very interested to see like which season turns out, if I do get a chance to hunt that hill country stuff. Very interested to see what season works out best for me. Because like down here, like we've been saying, I'm not going to say we're close to dialing it in, but we focus more on the early season. Both of us pretty much do. And then neither of us have figured anything out about hunting in December around here.
Quite frankly, around here, it's a waste of time.
It seems that way.
It's a waste of time. The only reason I do it is because I enjoy being in the woods.
Exactly.
Before we started filming, I would very, very rarely go hunting in December.
Yeah. December is basically, for me, it's like experimental. It's like, all right, we're done with early season. We got to try some new stuff. And I just get creative. I hunt a lot in public. I do a lot of in-season scouting.
I do a lot of stupid stuff trying to kill deer.
Yeah, exactly. I'll sit there and in December break out rattling antlers or something.
Yeah,
just
I don't
to see what happens.
I don't like hunt. I don't like hunting over in a food plot over a big feeder. But December's that time of the year that I'll do it a few times, you know, yeah. Because that's about the only way you'll see deer, because they very rarely move in December. It's like they're for bucks. I've been pointed down to, you know, trying to rationalize it in my mind. I point it down to bucks don't move a lot in December because they're eating a lot, but they're trying to build up fat and build up energy for when they lose it in the rut.
That's
just me trying to rationalize it. I don't know what the scientific data behind that is, but I highly doubt there's anybody actually doing that type of research in our area.
Yeah, it's also like that's when the highest pressure, other than the rut, the highest hunting pressure is like the first week or first couple weeks of gun season,
which is the end of November.
Like on public, you'll see a handful of trucks around here. You'll see a handful of trucks out there during bow season. You'll see some real hardcore guys out there about every day, but the opening weekend of rifle season is like the busiest freaking time of the year, and anywhere around.
There'll be 100 trucks out there.
Oh yeah.
And in a small area.
Yeah. And I feel like it's just the hunting pressure plus them trying to build up fat for the rut. That's probably what it is. And they just lock down and it's hard to get them in front of you.
Yeah. So if you're new to hunting, take it serious going in. Hunt your tail off. Especially if you bow hunt, not hunt your tail off down here from October the 15th to whenever the weekend rifle season comes in. And then pick you up go ahead, and unless you're going to strictly bow hunt, unless not, you go ahead and pick up your rifle. Hunt those first couple weekends of bow hunting or rifle season. By the time you feel burned out, take the month December off, then you'll be fresh and excited to go for the actual time that you might have a good chance killing a deer.
If you're in our area, by the way, and you do have like a lot of December success, I'm not sure.
Comment down below. Get up with us.
At least give us some tips or something in the comments or messages on Instagram or something, Facebook.
If you're willing to and you live close enough, we might get you in on a podcast.
And we're not talking.
Bring you in, sit down, and have a conversation about how you have December success.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like hunting in the places that have a December rut. I'm talking about around here, like a February rut, basically. Even if it's not necessarily right here,
south of Montgomery County, Alabama,
pretty much, yeah,
yeah,
or even a little bit into Florida. There's a decent chunk of Florida that's got the same rut as us.
Yeah,
but if you have a lot of December success with a February, late January, early February rut, please let us know.
I'm open to suggestions because I'm getting tired of feeling like I'm wasting my time December. I killed my first deer when I was 7, and I've been hunting ever since. And I think I've only ever killed 2 bucks in December.
I don't even know if I've ever killed a buck in December. Maybe I might have killed one in front of dogs.
I killed that one that I chipped the horn with the bullet.
Yeah, I remember that.
My bullet hit the rack.
The best part of the best time of December is between Christmas and New Year's, because for some reason,
yeah, that's different.
For some reason, those bucks do start cruising then.
They're getting into that January mode. But
seems like
if you can kill deer from December the 1st, like consistently from December the 1st till Christmas. I need to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, December, like right after Christmas, they like, what I've noticed at least, which you may notice something different, it's like they cruise a lot and they start moving in the daytime, and then not long after New Year's, they go missing again. And then about mid-January, that's when everything picks back up. It seems that way.
their best time of hunting in South Alabama is from January the, my birthday, January the 12th to February the 10th. The only reason it doesn't go further than that is because the season goes out.
Yep. I mean,
I guarantee you, our huntings would be good all the way till March the 20th if they would let us hunt it.
Yeah. We'd definitely have rut activity all the way through then.
That sure would be nice if deer season went out March the 19th and turkey season came in March the 20th. That'd be right up my alley. I'd be war slap out, man. But that would be fun.
I need the break.
It is nice having that break. but we could pull it a little bit closer. By the time 2 weeks is, you know, 2 weeks, that's plenty. Give me a couple weekends of sleep until noon. Then I'll be
I mean, usually one weekend of relaxing and just chilling and not worrying about killing something. Usually at one weekend's enough to make me start thinking, when is turkey season coming in?
Yeah. Same. But anything else you want to say?
Subscribe to YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere, everywhere you listen to this. Leave us a review on Amazon.
All major platforms. Amazon.
I'm not Amazon.
iTunes.
iTunes. I was thinking Apple, I guess.
Apple, whatever they call it now. It's called. If you look on your phone, it's got a little. If you got an iPhone, it just says podcasts on it.
Yeah.
And it got like an eye with a bunch of circles coming off of it. I don't know what that was about. Yeah. But, check us out on all of our major platforms. We have all social medias except for Twitter because we don't need that type of negativity in our life. And, make sure you check out Native Sense. And that's NativeSenseLLC.com. Threads Custom Bowstrings, ThreadsCustomBowstrings.com, or on Facebook for either one of them. And make sure you checked out that link down below and get you one of these hats. I got on the Lake Master. He has on the Hollywood Hunter. I think we were wearing these last time. Once you get to wear one, you just kind of like wearing it for a little while. Yes. But we got some. We do have some more hats in the works if they would ever ship them. But we do have 7 different types. So go in there, order all 7, and then you can wear a different hat every day of the week.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
So check that out, and we really appreciate y'all watching or listening, and stay tuned for another 25 High Foot Podcast. Sorry, it's getting late.
Always remember to live life 25 High. We'll see you next time.